From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deck. And most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. How's everybody feeling?
Back for another week. I'm feeling awesome. Can I tell you a quick story?
Please,
yeah. Okay, so my son is aware of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. We haven't watched any of the movies yet, but he has a couple of these, the paper or the cardboard books of Star Wars stories, and he knows what a lightsaber is, and he's real hyped about lightsabers.
So does he say it?
Huh?
He says lightsaber?
Yeah, lightsabers, yeah. He loves it, and he makes the sound. He goes, woo, woo, woo,
woo. That's great. Awesome.
Well, so I realized that my wife and I had an old stash of glow sticks, because, you know, everybody's just got some glow sticks hanging around that are still packaged from, you know, back in your 20s, right?
I mean, live your truth, bro.
Cool, yeah. Okay. So I realized that we had some. I found like a green one and a red one. So I get to play Darth Daddy, and he gets to, and he pretends that he's Yoda, always Yoda.
Yeah.
And we have lightsaber battles with glow sticks now, almost nightly.
You think it's because Yoda is like around his height and he recognizes that?
Super agile.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's got to be it. That's got to be it.
Mind control powers. That's a, yes. That's a selling point.
Yeah. And he does Force Tornado on me all the time, and it's debilitating. It's
brutal.
Yeah.
Where is that in the lexicon, though? Force Tornado. Is that, did he make that up or is that canon?
Pretty sure the next episode is going to have a Force Tornado.
Okay.
I mean, you heard it here first.
Okay.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing this franchise develop, Matt.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I think the Star Wars thing's going places.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my spider sense tells me. How are you doing, Noel? How's it going?
I'm doing well. Speaking of spider sense, did you guys see the end game? The end game?
I did.
I haven't.
Okay.
No discussion then.
No. I kind of want discussion.
Well, I mean, this isn't really the place I go for.
Save me 3 hours, please.
It's a victory lap.
It's a really, really expensive victory lap. And yeah. It has some very satisfying conclusions.
Sure.
Yeah. It has a few things that are kind of like WTF.
Yeah.
And it has a few things that are kind of a little bit glossed over and then sort of like, wait, what happened to that thread? They sort of left it. But all in all. What a feat.
What a treat.
What a feat, though. Like, just of organizational yes. skills, right?
Sure.
Just to give all those characters their due.
And
you know?
No one's expecting that Wolverine cameo. That was like, that is wild.
Is there ever any point in the movie where all of those A-list like actors are in one place?
Totally.
Like you can tell they're not green screened in or whatever?
Uh-huh.
I can't comment.
That's too much, though.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, they're the Avengers plus all the others.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a payoff people have been waiting for. And I think it's well worth the price of a ticket. You know, that's the kind of film that's good to see in theaters.
Good to see on the IMAX if you have that ability.
For sure.
I will die on this hill, to quote Ben Bolin. Screw 3D. Not worth the price. I'd pay that price just to see it on the bigger screen with a better sound system.
Did you watch it in 3D?
No, I don't. One time, Black Panther I saw in 3D because someone invited me, having already bought the tickets, and then popped it on me once I got there that it was 3D.
Whoa.
And the tickets were like $40, A. B,
wow.
Don't like 3D.
Yeah.
C, it's like, it gave me a headache. It wasn't fun. And I had my kid with me, so that was like $80 of movie. It was, I mean, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but.
I don't know, man. Once you factor in popcorn.
I just don't like 3D. I don't find it immersive or fun.
We're already in 3D. You know what I mean?
Like
I don't
the Weird
get
Al
it.
Album.
Yeah, fully.
It's like advertising a movie with sound. I had this.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Ben, how are you doing?
I have an interesting story for you about Avengers that has nothing to do with the film, really. I won't spoil anything because I know a lot of us listening feel very strongly about spoilers. I love them. Most people hate them. Anyway, so I'm watching this thing, and it is a long journey. It's a long film, and there are ups and there are downs, and I think overall it's very well made. But there's a really sad part that gets a lot of people. And as I was watching the sad part in the theater, I heard someone kind of behind me. And I thought, oh, man, I guess got a cold or something. You shouldn't really be outside if you're contagious. And then I heard more people like, And
did everybody get a hold of some, like...
I thought people... I was like, wow, it's really going around, you know?
Yeah.
Is this, and I've never encountered measles in the wild, so I was like, do people have measles or whatever? And then the people I was at the movie with, I asked them about it afterwards, and they said, no, you've... I don't want to use the strong language they use, but they said, no, dude, don't be a robot. They were crying.
Yeah.
So I think I just am missing that emotional... switch.
Yeah, I would have thought your one feeling a year would possibly have fallen on the Avengers.
No, I would have put that bet down too.
Three.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm going for
one of your three.
Thanks, guys.
You could have reserved for the Avengers
because you genuinely did grow up with these characters.
That's right.
I did. I guess we all did.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but out of a lot of people that I know, you're probably one of. Yeah, you know the characters in the story. And
you know
the
comics, too. You know
that's
all
what I'm saying.
Yeah, the original lore.
You guys know the comics.
Not to like the degree. You. So many of these characters were not big flagship characters, at least for me. You know.
Yeah. But be that as it may, I think we did a really great job talking about the Avengers without giving anything away.
Totally.
So if you haven't seen it yet, do check it out.
Yeah.
They are not paying us to say this. Mm-hmm. We just think it's so. And Matt, I can't wait till you see it so we can hang out and talk about it.
I can't wait to finally see Ant-Man get crushed by the boot of some other character.
That's actually his nemesis. It's a supervillain called the Boot.
The Boot.
No, it's not.
It's like kind of teased
I
as
honestly
the next
don't
story
know.
Arc.
I honestly don't know.
Paul is a huge film buff. Mission Control over here, and he enjoyed the film as well. So if you can't take Nolan and I's cosine as worth it,
yeah,
take Paul's.
Okay, but what about Game of Thrones, yo?
Game of Thrones.
What about the Game of Thrones?
Hey, did you guys love that cup cameo?
The cup cameo made my day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get it because Cup's story is super complicated in the books, and it's like a pivotal point. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it justice on the screen, you know?
Oh, so. And Tyrion is like giving it the side eye. Yeah.
Did you
going
see
down.
That they CGI'd it out, though?
Yeah.
That's one of the beautiful things as far as the network's concerned of streaming is, you know, if it's printed and it's in the theaters, they're not going to pull all those prints out of every theater in the country. Mm-hmm. But for this, they just go in there, blip, re-upload.
Yep.
It's like it was never there, except the internet never forgets.
How many people got fired, do you think?
Just one best boy.
One best boy with the best dream.
That's right.
So, well, that guy became a legend. We'll get to the point of the show in just a second.
You guys owe us a little bit of a rambling intro. I think we've been keeping it pretty tight.
Right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we want to hear directly from you your opinions about this intro or your opinions about any old thing on your mind from previous episodes or suggestions for a future episode. Matt, our friend and cohort Matt, has been on this amazing journey listening to voicemails.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I haven't been off of this journey in a while now.
Does someone need to take up the mantle, Matt?
It's so great. It's such a roller coaster because it gets really dark sometimes, and then it is the funniest thing I've heard all week sometimes, and then it just happens again. But the best thing is that everything that gets put on the voicemail message machine is genuine and awesome. And if you're hearing this, you are awesome. Give us a call again. You can call 1-833-STDWYTK. Right now, leave us a message, any suggestions, even on the format of the show, just tell us. Tell us what you want us to do. We're listening.
Get weird with it. And also, speaking of the phones, shout out to our formerly anonymous caller, Stephen B., who hipped us to Canada's Shag Harbor incident as an episode. Thanks so much for tuning in, Stephen. Stephen reached out to us. And I hope you don't get mad at us for saying this, Stephen, but he said, guys, I don't know why I didn't say my name, but I'm the one who called about Shag Harbor incident. So
there you go.
I especially get it. It's tough when you're working live and you only got 3 minutes. But call us. Try it for yourself. Don't take my word or Stephen's word for it. Today, we're off to England. And as they say in Staffordshire,
Dorsum.
Dm.
Yes. Yes, yes. What the heck are we talking about? We'll tell you. Journey with us. And if you are a listener on the other side of the Atlantic, if you are located in Europe, if you are located in the United Kingdom, if you are located in Staffordshire or if you've ever been there, we want to hear from you. Here's the thing about Staffordshire. It's a county in the West Midlands of England. It's landlocked, right? It's not one of the coastal areas. It has a pretty healthy population of just over 1 million people. And like most places in the United Kingdom, it's home to a storied past, numerous historical buildings, monuments, and so on. You know, that thing that you probably hear thrown around all the time. In Europe, 200 miles is a long way. And in the U.S., 200 years is a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. So this place does have a lot of history. However, most people outside of the United Kingdom and Europe haven't really heard of the place unless, that is, they're into the world of fringe research and conspiracies.
That's right. Yeah, Staffordshire is actually a little bit famous in those realms because there's this tiny little thing relatively to the rest of Staffordshire, tiny, tiny little thing. It's a monument called the Shepherd's Monument. And on this monument, there's an engraving. It's got one of the most enigmatic, as of yet, unbroken ciphers that you heard us say, or at least phonetically attempt to say earlier.
Osvav.
Are you backwards masking, you guys?
We're going to talk progressively in backwards masking.
Yes.
In this episode. Like it. Yeah. It was Paul's idea. Yeah, it's true. It's true. We are phonetically pronouncing this very weird cipher.
It's literally eight characters and then two more little characters and an exclamation mark?
No. That's just in there for the effect. I know. You know, it made me think of – do you guys – you know, I don't – have time to play a lot of video games, but I'm in this somewhat monogamous video game relationship with a thing called Skyrim.
And still?
I went back and started playing it again. Wow. I'm different now. I'm an Argonian. They're the lizard people.
I was a lizard people.
You were?
I was.
Yeah, were you a mage? I know you love mages.
I was a mage. I was an Argonian mage.
Nice.
Oh, messed up. You should have been a thief.
Why?
I don't know. Argonians are awesome.
They have a lot of attributes. That's a stereotype.
They have a lot of good attributes for it. That's all I'm saying. Oh, God, that sounds awful, but it's so true because you literally pick your like species or your race.
Yeah. It's a great game. And you can go back and you can do all the stuff you want to do. Anyway, it reminds me of the Dragon Shouts where they're all, you know, it's got really dope music in that game. And they're like, Dovahkiin. Dovahkiin.
That's right.
You know?
Oh, dude, it totally does.
Exactly. That's intense stuff, you know? But anyhow, this weird Dovahkiin-esque code came to be sometime between – well, the monument came to be sometime between 1748 and 1763 when this British Parliament member named Thomas Anson commissioned a monument to be built at a place called Shugborough Hall in Staffordshire. And we may be mispronouncing that. We talked a little bit about that before we went on the air.
Shugborough.
And Noel, you said it feels like an Australian.
It does.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
Shugborough.
It does a little bit.
I think, yeah.
I don't know why. Shug. Just the word shug, you know?
Feels Australian.
It seems like the name of some kind of Australian implement, you know? A shug.
Dear Aussies.
I don't know what that would be.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like a shiv, but it's more blunt, you know?
I'm so into Australian slang. Calling McDonald's Maccas has like just – it's changed my world.
They say that?
Yeah, M-A-C-C-A.
Nice.
I don't know if it'll actually get me to go to a McDonald's, but I like to drive by and say Maccas.
I feel like a shug would be some kind of club. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like a club where you'd party, like a club you'd
like a cudgel.
Club someone with. Yeah.
Yeah. So this place, Shugborough Hall in Staffordshire, is the location of this monument. And Thomas Anson, although he commissions this monument, the Shepherd's Monument, his brother George, who is an admiral, actually pays for it, and a Flemish sculptor named Peter Schemakers, with two E's, is the guy who actually builds the thing. But what does it look like?
Well, the sculpture is comprised of a mirror image, or what's known as a bas relief, of a painting by Nicolas Poussin that's called The Shepherds of Arcadia. And it's also known as, okay, I'm going to give this a whirl. I think this is Latin, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Et in Arcadia ego, les burghers de Arcadie, or The Arcadian Shepherds, and it was painted in 1637, or between 1637 to 1638.
Mm-hmm. And it's this fascinating, iconic work. It's more than worth your time to check it out. And I think some of us listening will be familiar with this painting and know where this is going.
Because it's shepherds that are around a tomb, right? Mm-hmm. And then they have very specific hand gestures that they're doing, and check it out.
So there are four figures in the painting. There are three shepherds. There is a female figure gathered around this tomb, as you said, Matt. And two of the shepherds are pointing at the tomb in a real sketchy way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And on this tomb, there's this Latin text, Et in Arcadia ego, which translates to I am even in Arcadia, or I am also in Arcadia. You'll hear other versions with like even in Arcadia am I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever. It's Latin. It's really cool phrase, very famous phrase in literature. But let's bracket that. Just know that that exists right now. And let's go back to this sculpture, this bas relief. It looks like the painting, but it's got some key differences.
Now, the first big thing you'll notice if you're looking at the monument, the Shugborough monument, is that there is an extra sarcophagus that's sitting on top of a tomb inside the original painting, which you go, okay, I wonder what that could mean, an extra tomb. Maybe there are two people entombed that we need to be thinking about in this. Who knows? It could be more cryptic than that. Let's move on. Because the other thing is that there are two stone heads above the image from the painting. Okay, so you got one that's this mirthful a mirthful fellow. The look on his face is the way to tell the mirth.
That's how he laughs.
Yeah. The other, though, is horned and bearing a marked resemblance to that old Greek god Pan that you might remember.
That old goat.
Literally the old goat Pan that is both fun and like whimsical, but also extremely creepy.
Yeah.
It has some representations, some symbolical representations of other things.
Mm-hmm.
The goat being one of them you might remember from other things we've talked about on the show. Mm-hmm. With the old Baphomet.
Ah, that's right. Yes, yes. And while the sculpture itself is impressive, most people are kind of over the sculpture.
Yeah.
They're more fascinated by this inscription carved below it. At first glance, it seems simple. It's, as you said, Ben, it's a scant two lines of text.
Yep.
That's it. And it looks very confusing. It looks like the worst Wheel of Fortune clue ever.
I'm going to do a version of your Skyrim of how I would do it if it was
God,
a chance.
You ready? Yeah.
Ooswav!
Wow.
That was great.
Wow. Did that blow out like crazy? I try. Okay. All right. Cool.
we got protections against that, against the dark arts. I would do it more as like, Ooswav!
That's great.
Okay.
Because the double V at the end gives you a V-V-V-V-V-V-V sound.
Yeah.
But how do you add in the D and the M, though? That's a separate line, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the top line, O-U-O-S-V-A-V-V. And it's encapsulated or bookended by these letters at the bottom line. So if you look at the second line, the line below, O-U-O-S-V-A-V-V, there is a letter D below and to the left of the first O.
If you're looking at it.
If you're looking straight at it. And there's an M below and to the right of the last V. So when you put it all together, that's what it looks like. It looks like that agglomeration of vowels and Vs,
yeah,
and one S, and then below it, there's the D and the M. And we keep adding the exclamation mark just because it feels like something you should shout. But appearing simple is not the same thing as being simple, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of people have been trying to figure out, since this thing was put up, what exactly it means. And nobody has, let's say, sufficiently come up with an answer. But again, even if you think you completely got the answer, there's a matter of proving it, because who's going to prove it to you? Anyway, we'll get into that right now, because let's go through some of the people who've actually attempted. Several Charles in here.
It's very Charles heavy. Charles Dickens. We may be familiar with some of his work. He wrote a ton of things that are popular in Western canon, and he was defeated by this series of letters. He tried and he failed.
Then we have another important British Charles, also with a D for a last name, Darwin. Oh. Mm-hmm. Who apparently ate every animal that he documented.
True story. That was him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wait, you're telling me he was out there in the Galapagos and he was just going to town?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess when you're in the Galapagos, he ate all the animals.
He apparently had a history. He was in some kind of club of exotic meats at Cambridge or whatever, where he would eat like albatrosses and egrets and weird, you know, stringy, gamey meats. And he carried that spirit right into his research.
That is like one of the most elite clubs I've ever heard of.
He apparently defended – we learned this from Jack O'Brien. Apparently he defended this practice by saying it was for science, but he ate like 20 tortoises or something?
To the point where I think he threatened their very existence on said island. Because he's thought of as this like great conservationist. But that really was not his bag at all. He was more just a scientist, researcher, documenter, and a devourer.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Yet, he mastered the tortoise. He discovered the secret of evolution, and yet he could not surmount these letters.
Wow. Neither could a man named Josiah Wedgwood. He was one of the godfathers of industrialization. And oh man, he got out all the steamworks. He like figured out, okay, we're going to do this whole thing. We're going to get an assembly line and figure out how to do this. And guess what? Nope.
He couldn't, even though he industrialized the manufacture of pottery.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's important. It sounds weird now, but take our word for it. He was a big deal. Maybe a subject for a different episode. But here we are. It's 2019, and those old aunts and bros are long since gone to dust and death.
The guys who actually made the thing.
Yeah. Well, the guys who commissioned it.
Yes. Okay, you're right. But the ones who commission are generally the ones who have the meaning, right? Because the person who sculpted it and chiseled it just knew, oh, that goes there.
Yeah, got his marching orders. Good call. So here we are. And everyone still wonders what on earth this code could mean. And just as importantly, everyone is still wondering whether someone has finally solved it. What are we talking about? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back, and I just have to say, Paul was trying to get us to go to ad break for like 10 minutes there. And it was so much fun to watch Paul and continually nod to him like, oh yes, of course. But when I could see where exactly we were going, oh, toying with you, Paul, is one of my greatest excitements.
Here's where it gets crazy.
Ooh. So over the past few centuries, numerous people have made varying claims about this inscription. That includes conjecture about the intent, any some kind of explanation or origin story, and most importantly, the meaning.
So let's look at the theories in no particular order. Some are a little out there. Some may seem more mundane, but we want to see which ones sound the most reasonable to you. So there's an author named Dave Ramsden. In a 2014 book, he references manuscript evidence from the local record office, and he says that based on what he found, Thomas Anson's peers thought the monument was a funereal structure and that was dedicated to some figure known just as the Shepherdess. So from his take, that DM stands for Dismanibus, and the eight-letter inscription is a cipher concealing the name of the person being memorialized. So in his book, he walks through a pretty thorough decryption effort, and he argues that through the use of a polyalphabetic cipher, he has found that the name they're referring to is Magdalene.
Dude. By the way, the Dismanibus that you heard us talking about, it's in reference to Roman spirits, like or goat, not ghosts, but spirits of people who have died. It's kind of really interesting because it has actually further back, or it has pagan roots as well. So just an interesting thing. And when you connect it up with what Ben is just talking about there, I don't know.
But what's the difference between a spirit and a ghost, Matt?
Well, isn't it the same thing? But a ghost is trapped and caught behind, right?
Ah, yes.
They cannot pass over.
That is the distinction, I believe.
Maybe.
Yeah. I like that. I stand behind that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And also, but having that name Magdalene, I mean, come on, we all know what that might be referring to, right? Old Mary Magdalene?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yes, the plot thickens. But that's not the only thing. Just spoiler alert, people disagree with this author. In another book called Anson's Gold, a fellow named George Edmund says that we have to remember George Anson was a naval man. He was an admiral. And George Edmund argues that Anson created this cipher to hide the latitude and longitude of an island where he had buried or discovered a huge Spanish treasure.
Oh, it's a treasure map. Of course it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that he mounted a secret expedition in the 18th century to recover this treasure, which was located but due to unforeseen circumstances, left where it was found.
Oh, man. Do you think it's in that one giant hole? You know the one I'm talking about?
Oak Island?
Yeah.
Some Oak Island?
You think it's Oak Island?
Oh, man. Do you think they're really finding stuff at Oak Island, or do you think that the production team is slipping
throwing stuff into the hole?
Feathers and I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I had heard that, but I don't have a ton of experience. I've never been there, so.
It would certainly make for a good TV to have things discovered. That's all I would say.
Good point. Good point. So the idea here is that letters in code were sent back to Lord Anson by the expedition leader, and that these validate and include part of the cipher, and that this proves what the cipher is for. So George Edmund isn't necessarily saying that the cipher is solved, but he's saying that's the right direction to look into. And then we have a returning school of thought from a previous episode. In 1982, the authors of a book called The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail speculated that the painter you had mentioned earlier, Noel, Poussin, was a member of what's called the Priory of Sion with an S. Yeah, and we remember we interviewed the daughter of one of the authors.
Bajent was her last name, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a great interview. Fascinating story. And the whole idea here, right, is that perhaps the Shepherds of Arcadia that are in this monument are actually pointing to something very specific, not necessarily anything to do with the tomb, mm-hmm. but where to find the Holy Grail.
Dun, dun.
And then there's this whole other thing where as part of the promotion of the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, they had these experts, or they're formerly code breakers, mm-hmm. right, who came through and they tried to figure out what the heck this thing is. And they specifically were looking at this connection here with the Priory of Sion connection, with the shepherds pointing to the Holy Grail. And we got a little more on that. So it's Sheila and Oliver Lawn, two of the people involved here. They propose that the letters actually encode a specific phrase, Jesus H. Defy. D-E-F-Y.
It's spelled like defy, right?
Yeah. Where the H supposedly stands for Christos, and this is a Greek word meaning Messiah. And the reference is to a Jesus bloodline, or the bloodline of Jesus H. Christ. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know what that comes from, Jesus H. Christ. What is that? Do we know? Somebody call us.
right. Okay. Yeah, it's this idea, right, that Jesus Christ, the historical Jesus Christ, did actually have children.
Yes.
Or issue, as they would be called. And you know, this is very Dan Brown. Dan Brown leans very heavily on this in one of his books, at least, in The Da Vinci Code. And the idea is that this bloodline was secreted away, and you'll read about it being secreted away in different parts of the world, often France. So that idea is really interesting because these code breakers, Sheila Lawn and Oliver Lawn, are no joke. They are the legit, true blue, real deal.
Yes.
They were working on Enigma in World War II. So they're not just some couple who happened by, you know what I mean?
They're breaking Nazi codes, and then they think that that's what happened, right? Or they think that's what the meaning could be.
Right, and Sheila Lawn said that she believes it may also be kind of a love letter of some sort.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing you have to remember here is that they're having ideas put out there for them to look for in a way. You know, with the way it was shaped with the promotion for the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail and for what it could mean. You just keep that in mind. You're the little skeptic part of the back of your mind that they're being led a little bit.
So already this is getting weird, right?
Yeah.
We've got someone saying it's one of the key clues to the secret story of Jesus Christ. We've got someone else saying it's buried treasure, and we've got someone else saying that Anson was in love, perhaps, with someone and needed, for some reason, to keep their identity a secret.
Yeah.
So how does this shake out in the modern day?
Yeah, most of the modern theories approach this from sort of a acrostic kind of perspective, or like, you know, think about any kind of word patterned word art, I guess, where various letters line up, almost like a crossword puzzle, but an acrostic is a specific form of this, meaning they interpret each letter as the initial letter of a larger word.
So like M-A-T-T, for example, not to pick on you, like make Alice take Tylenol or whatever.
Absolutely. So sort of like a mnemonic device of like the way to remember something. Or they're also very popular in like presentations or kind of like self-help, touchy-feely kind of, you know, office PowerPoints, you know, about things like synergy and, you know, thing, you know, S would stand for super cool and E. Anyway, it's not good.
I love that. I'm fond of making up those kind of things.
They're fun when you make them absurd on purpose, but like as an actual motivational device, it sort of elicits an instant eye roll because it's sort of like a cliche, right? You know what I mean?
Right, but it's just a fun mental exercise. Oh. It is tough to take it seriously, though.
Well, it's also tough to do it well, and that's the joke, too, right? Is a lot of times they end up – people run out of ideas, and they just kind of become either redundant or just absurd.
If you're ever in a knife fight, remember to stop. That stands for stab two other people.
There you go. Oh. Very, very good. Very, very helpful. But yeah, so in 1951, Morchard Bishop, or Morchard, I'm going to go with the hard CH, speculated that the letters might be an initialism for the Latin phrase optime uxoris optime, sororis vidus amantissimus. I want to sing this in like a choir voice. Sorosis vidus amantissimus vovit virtuibus.
That was great.
But the big question is, what does that mean for those of us who don't speak Latin?
Best of wives, best of sisters, a most devoted widower dedicates, parentheses, this to your virtues.
Oh,
that's nice.
See, now that's really, really nice. So that's specifically about George Anson, right? And that would mean, if this is correct, that those eight letters are actually just a coded dedication to his wife after she passed away.
Which is interesting because why would you have to put that in code?
Well, I think it's less of in code and more of fitting it on the monument perhaps, right?
Okay.
And this would be my opinion. Mm-hmm. His spouse, by the way, Lady Elizabeth York, daughter of Philip York, 1st Earl of Hardwick. They did not have any children, but I could see that if it's just a person whose spouse died and had the means to give some kind of dedication to her that only maybe even had meaning to him. Maybe it's a private thing.
Yeah. I like it, to me, on surface, it seems it seems very strange and a little bit chuckle-worthy that this guy would say, all right, I really love my wife, and I think all these wonderful, nice things about her, but no one can know.
Well, yeah. Well,
guys, I love my wife. Everyone keep it a secret.
The other...
Don't tell anyone.
The other thing that you could say here just before we move on is that maybe it was a backhanded thing or like a cruel joke in her memory, because maybe she wasn't a devoted – maybe she wasn't the best of wives and sisters and devoted
said with an eye roll kind of a little tongue in the cheek. Yeah.
This is before that forward slash S that could stand for sarcasm.
Yeah.
And what? I need to use that.
But see, but that way only he knows that he's being a dick to his wife.
Oh, good. Good. Oh, this is terrible. I hope that's not the case. Other people don't think it is, though. There's a guy named Steve Regimbal who interprets the letters as standing for a new Latin translation of the following phrase. Vanity, O vanity, saith the preacher, all is vanity.
Oh, Ecclesiastes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Ecclesiastes 12:8. He speculates that this phrase... Orator ut omnia sunt vanitas et vanitas vanitatum would – I feel like I just cast a spell.
Yep.
he thinks it may be the source of an earlier inscription, omnia vanitas, which might have been carved on an alcove at the estate by one of Thomas Anson's pals, George Littleton.
Interesting.
Keep an eye on that maybe, though. That might and that maybe.
This is one of the ones that, I guess I just don't, I need to know more about that because vanity of vanities saith the preacher, all is vanity. All is vanity.
Well, that's true.
All worldly things and actions are vanity.
It's
just like carving a giant monument for anything.
You know that, well, yeah. Well, you know what this reminds me of? Reminds me of the Georgia Guidestones. That whole idea of like, give a little thought to what's important. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, but at least the Georgia Guidestones' intent was to be understood.
Right.
Yeah, so,
right.
You know, it's not really very cool if you have like a message for the world and no one can understand it, or if they're just wildly speculating about what it means.
That's a good point. So it may be a personal thing, you know what I mean? Of personal significance to the Anson brothers. If they are indeed the people who inscribed this, the NSA also got involved. So
of
we
course
had
they did.
U.S. intelligence in there. A guy named Keith Massey in Modern Times, you'll read some press about him claiming to have solved the letters. He interprets them as an initialism for the Latin phrase, oro ut omnes sequantur viam ad verum vitam.
I pray that all may follow the way to true life. Is this biblical again?
Yeah. Johnny 4:16. John.
John. Yeah, that's really good.
Reference to that verse reading, John 4:16 reading, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Ego sum via et veritas et vita.
Right? And that's the one that Stone Cold Steve Austin had printed on the back of his sleeveless leather jacket.
John 14:6?
No, it was
3:16.
3:16.
That's the one. That's the go-to.
That's the go-to?
Yeah.
As a child, I never understood that.
Oh, I have way too many of those rattling around in my brain that I could probably I'm not even going to.
Verses or wrestler trivia?
Just verses and wrestler trivia.
But they kind of conflated together over time. Yeah.
I thought The Undertaker was the coolest, but that's very on brand for me.
Sting, man.
3:16 is just for God so loved the world.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's a very nice message that Stone Cold has on his. That's very counter to his rough and tumble Stone Cold image, you know?
For God so loved the world that he made me. And then what does he do?
He does the Stone Cold stunner.
Stun y'all.
It reminds me of like Jules in Pulp Fiction doing that biblical verse. Only that one gets scary, though. That one gets, I will strike down upon thee and all that. Mm-hmm. You'd think, anyway.
But which wasn't an actual Bible verse.
Are you kidding?
No, it's
what?
Not.
No.
Really?
Sorry, this whole time, man.
Sorry.
Dang.
It's an interpretation. Let's put it that way.
And maybe it's just vanity. Maybe all is vanity. But these are just some of the most popular concepts. Now it's time to ask whether any of this checks out. And we'll do just that after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. And Matt, you just wrecked my childhood. That Tarantino line isn't from the Bible. It's a much more elaborated version. The real verse is actually just, "And I will execute great vengeance upon them with furious rebukes, and they shall know I am the Lord when I shall lay my vengeance upon them." So, obviously.
Yeah. Well, that's one translation. There are so many different ones.
Yeah.
But
Vulgate versions and whatnot. I like the word rebuke. Let's bring rebuke back. Yeah. I want to rebuke some stuff.
Isn't that just when you like call someone out, you take them to task? It's sort of like a rebuttal, but it's a little stronger. It's a little, it's like it implies shaming of some sort, or like finger wagging, right?
It criticizing someone.
Yeah.
So it's not quite rejecting. It's kind of admonishing, but in a very strong way. Kind of like how contempt is worse than dislike.
It's a really good white instant for pretty low mana cost, just so you know.
You have made so many people's day with just that sentence.
I don't think I understand the reference.
It's the MTG, Magic the Gathering.
Ah, yes. Yes, of course. Anytime you say something that I don't understand, I should always assume that it's Magic. Even when you say MTG, I have to be like, Madison Square Garden?
Triangle.
Oh, we're making an acrostic.
There you go.
Move them giblets? I don't know.
Yep.
I'm working live here.
But literally, all of my vocabulary comes from middle school Magic the Gathering playing.
We should get together and play Magic. At some point,
I have to learn first.
All of us?
Yeah.
Everyone?
Like, even you, the listener?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Come hang out. Let's play.
Let's do it. We'll sneak everyone in. I think it's more fun if we feel like it's a heist.
We'll do an MTG meetup. MTG conspiracy meetup.
Sounds epic.
Yeah. Meet the group, MTG.
Or the gang, or the guys.
I like the gang.
Now, but it's not an acrostic and an acronym aren't the same thing, right? I mean, they're kind of. No, because isn't the down word has to be a word in and of itself.
Oh.
Right? So MTG, even if it's spelled MTG in Magic the Gathering, it's not an acrostic because MTG is meaningless without it representing something.
Yeah, right? An acronym would be the abbreviation made out of the first letters of the words. So our MTG thing is an acronym, but an acrostic would be some kind of poem or form of writing like you described where the first letter or syllable or word of each line spells out a word.
Ah.
So we've got to ask ourselves, does any of this stuff check out? Not our plans to invite everyone to play Magic the Gathering with us and have Matt roundly kick the snot out of all of us.
I'd go easy.
Very good at that game. You are lying. You're one of my favorite people, but I can tell when you're lying.
Oh.
No, Matt is really, really good at this. So not talking about that stuff, but talking about this concept, the one that I think really stuck out to us and to a lot of us listening now is the idea of this Priory of Sion.
I think this is definitely where the mystery heightens, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is a wild one. So this is a fringe, I guess, secret society, maybe a fraternal order is a good way to describe it. It was founded, the official story is it was founded and then dissolved in 1956 by a guy named Pierre Plantard as part of a hoax. But people who buy into the idea think it dates back much, much further, you know, back to, of course, the time of the living historical Jesus Christ. This was considered, this was not taken very well or very seriously by a lot of people in the academy with a capital A. But the concept existed for a long time. Some people saying it was a hoax and some people taking it very seriously and some people even claiming to be members of the Priory of Sion. And then boom, it went mainstream when Dan Brown leveraged this concept for the basis of the Da Vinci Code, which is I still think a solid film, and I enjoyed the book.
I would say I have not read the book, but the film, I was happier than a lot of the critics about it.
You enjoyed it?
Yeah.
Did you see the subsequent film, The Inferno?
Angels and Demons and Infernos and
– I did not see that.
Was there a third one that was an Inferno?
Inferno is the third one. There's Angels and Demons is the second.
Were those –
Is that correct or am I –
did those do well? Did those do well? I mean, they made three of them. They must have done relatively well.
Sure, yeah. They had to coast off the blockbuster status.
Expensive.
Oh, yeah?
Okay, so Paul, just off mic or in our ears, and alas, you will never hear the voice of Paul, because if you did, it would melt your insides.
It would.
Much like hearing the voice of the Archangel Gabriel or something like that. But yeah, he says Inferno is apparently quite bad.
Oh.
I haven't seen any of them, but the reason I asked, did they do well, is because I just don't really have much of a memory of them existing.
I just remember the lure of...
The Lyov?
Yeah, the lure of...
You guys are great at French. I'm not even going to try it. So this book, by the way, The Da Vinci Code, just to be fair, we should say that he did receive criticism from other authors and people familiar with the theory because, you know, the authors of Holy Blood and Holy Grail felt to a large degree that he plagiarized their work.
Yeah.
And that he was essentially using their research to sell a novel. So that's the moment, though. That is the moment where this stuff hit the zeitgeist. And the idea here is that the Anson brothers were both members of the Priory of Sion, and the original painter of the Arcadian Shepherd painting was also a member of the Priory of Sion, and that the Holy Grail is not really a cup, a goblet. You know, the what's the Indiana Jones line? The cup of a carpenter.
Yeah.
It's yours, Indy. Yours and mine.
My face is melting. My face is melting.
He chose poorly.
He also should have moisturized.
Well, okay, so but it, if it's not that cup that has dastardly powers, what is it?
It's a symbol. It's a code phrase. It's describing the physical descendants of Jesus Christ. If this were true, if this were proven, this would be one of the most significant moments in human history. And we found a provable living descendant of the historical figure known as Jesus Christ. So if that's such an amazing thing, why hide it?
Because it would upend everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for most of the last 2,000 years, the idea of Jesus Christ having children at all was very heretical, and the Catholic Church worked arduously to control its message, and any splinter groups or dissident schools of thought were brutally suppressed, murdered wholesale, you know what I mean? Ironically, of course, this is exactly what happened to the first Christians, the predecessors of the Catholics.
New ideas banish thee and also torture.
Well, it's, you know, when you think about it, they wanted to control a message because they didn't have – the cost of communication is so high that when people are in isolation, you know, like on an island off the coast of France or somewhere in North Africa, they can begin to make their own saints, for instance. That's a huge thing even now, right?
Yeah. Dude, the more we look at it, it seems, in or at least in my opinion right now, the brutality of the control mechanisms throughout history do seem eerily necessary in a lot of ways, and that scares me a little bit.
It's a real politic kind of move. But this is the idea. So it would make sense then for this to be kept a secret because the idea is that the Catholic Church doesn't want this truth to get out.
Yeah.
And we know that while we don't know for sure whether this is true or whether it's all, you know, speculation, bluff and bluster, we do know that the Catholic Church has in the past run very, very large and ambitious information control campaigns, like for centuries. But is this too weird? It might be too weird for some of us. There's another mundane theory. It came from the Telegraph.
I love this.
I like this one too. This is interesting. Lay it on us.
Well, I guess if this is what it is, then it makes so many other things hilarious that have happened with the NSA getting involved and other high-profile people trying to solve this thing when in actuality perhaps it's just some graffiti left by people who lived in the house or the estate after the monument was put there. So this historian A.J. Morton. And he thinks that the inscription was put there in the 19th century by residents George Adams and his wife, Mary Vernon Venables.
I love that last name.
Vernon Venables. Now, what were the two bottom letters
D and M.
D and M. Hmm. All right. In my head, I was for some reason connecting G or making it G and M for a moment there, thinking George and Mary. Mm-hmm. But no, that doesn't make sense.
But Vernon Venables, that's two Vs.
That's at least two of them, and there are a lot of those.
So Morton, who is an expert in graves and monuments, he said that the letters can be matched to this couple, Adams and Vernon Venables, because they were relations of Thomas Anson, and there doesn't appear to be any reference to the curious letters until the 19th century. To Morton, this suggests that they were added later. Nothing in Thomas Anson's life fits the letters in the inscription except the family of his nephew, George Adams. So the idea is that regardless of all our speculation and these concepts of conspiracy spanning centuries, someone just did some graffiti, which is also it always reminds me of that story about the runic inscriptions in the Hagia Sophia. Did we talk about this on air?
I don't know that we have. Maybe as a casual mention.
So there's this thing in the Hagia Sophia that used to blow people's minds. It is a runic description called the Halfdan inscription and was discovered in 1964. And for a while, people, you know, not naturally being prone to reading runes, for a while people thought, whoa, this is amazing. Vikings get all the way down here and the history is hidden and it goes so much deeper and found. When they translated it and they still couldn't read all of it, it turned out that it said like Halfdan carved these runes. So it's the historical equivalent of, you know, Paul was here. So
that's so funny.
A lot of graffiti happens. This answer might not satisfy a lot of us, but any way you look at it, the truth is this. At this point, no one really agrees on what this inscription means. We've outlined some of the main theories, and each of these theories have their proponents. Some of us listening now have probably found one that particularly calls to us. And I will say the theory of a Priory of Sion is a fascinating read. We just don't know if it is connected to this inscription. But residents of Staffordshire encounter new theories continually, like all the time.
Yeah, we have a quote here that says, "We get five or six people a week who believe they have solved the code, so we're a bit wary of them now."
That's
just an exhausted Stratfordshire.
Wouldn't it be Shear?
Stratfordshire?
Well, it's Lancashire.
Lancashire.
Right.
I've always heard Lancashire.
Okay, well, if the Beatles, "The Day and the Life of" is to be believed, it's 10,000 holes in Blackford, Lancashire.
Yeah, but they were just trying to make it fit the song. It
wasn't a rhyme scheme thing.
So we would ask you, which do you believe? Do any of these theories sound particularly convincing to you? Do you have your own theory that you think your fellow listeners should know? Let us know about it. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Oh, and here's one for the Facebook group. Here's where it gets crazy. This is interesting. I don't know if the mods are going to get mad at us for opening this door.
Nothing worse than a mad mod.
We've got super mods. They're a real Avengers team of moderators. But we want to ask you, if you had a chance, what sort of mystery would you like to leave behind for future humans and future civilizations?
Specifically for trolling purposes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just to make them go, "Hawa? This is so important." But really, it just says, "Alfred wrote this."
I would want a huge cartoonish sculpture of something very mundane on a mountain.
Ooh.
Because stone would last so long.
Yeah.
And I'd want it to be toward the top of the mountain.
Oh.
And I would want it to be, when I say mundane, I mean like a bas relief of a taco or a burrito, and it's hundreds and hundreds of yards long.
Dude.
And then it's at the bottom, it just says like, "Okay."
Nice. Yeah, dude, that sounds great. I think a huge granite carving of a cat, right? Mm. And it's like sitting down, but it's also got wings and it's got some jewelry on it. This is all carved, of course.
Sure.
And it's got like the tail of some other creature, right? Mm. So like a chimera looking creature, mm. but make it huge and put it somewhere where everybody who comes after thinks that there's an actual being that looks like that.
Nice.
Like
nice.
The Sphinx?
Yeah.
I'm describing the Sphinx.
You are.
But without...
It took me a second.
Okay. All right.
I was so on board. I was like, you know what? I bet that's crazy enough to work. And it appears that you were correct, my friend. So yes, let us know. You can follow us. We're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. Follow us to see our episode updates. You can also follow some of our individual misadventures if you are so inclined.
You can hit me up at Embryonic Insider. I mainly post travel pics and pictures of my kid doing the dab, which is a thing that kids do still, apparently. It's not uncool quite yet. Although when I do it, it is uncool, she says.
Yeah.
It's called a dad dab.
You can find me at Ben Bolin.
And I actually started an Instagram page specifically to share out on this show.
Mm.
But I don't have it ready right now to tell you what it is. So you can find me. I do exist now. It's something Matt Frederick and iHeart.
All right. All right. This is news to me. Did you know about this, Noel?
What, Matt's new Instagram presence?
Yeah, I made a new one.
Well, will you accept my follow? Is it private?
It's not private.
All right. Well, then I guess you have no choice in the matter.
Should I private it? Should I privatize?
I'm not going to tell you what to do with your
privates. I don't know how to use Instagram. What do I do? Do you put things on there? I don't. Guys got to help me.
If you have Instagram advice for our good friend Matt, you can also call us directly. We mentioned it at the top of the show, but our number is
1-833-STDWYTK.
But what if that doesn't work either?
Then send us an email.
We are conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.